Hi, and welcome to the Georgia Politics Podcast. We're here to talk about Georgia politics. I'm Joseph G of Monotonous.net and Oroville.org, and I want to go around the table and have our panelists introduce themselves.
This is Griff Drift from Drifting Through the Grift.
I'm Garrett Vonk. I run a personal site at GarrettVonk.com.
Thomas Strickland. I run GrabbingSand.com. Mm-hmm.
And Randy Lewis from GeorgiaDailyDigest.com.
Well, thank you all for being here today. Legislature's in session. It doesn't seem like they've done a whole lot yet, but one thing that was a really big issue early on was Sunday alcohol sales. First, it was definitely gonna be illegal to buy beer and wine on Sunday, and then Governor Perdue called a radio talk show and basically said, "Hey, well, I wouldn't sign a bill like that." So then everyone said that everyone kind of stepped back and decided, you know, oh, we aren't going to be able to pass the Sunday alcohol sales thing. And then Governor Sunny came back again and said, well, you know, maybe I will pass it. So I'm just kind of want to throw that out to the group. You know, what do you generally feel about the Sunday alcohol sales issue? And do you think that it's got a chance of passing this?
Was that radio talk show where he was saying that people should learn to be more prepared?
Time management.
The rest of their lives as though it's only immature, like teenagers buying beer on Sunday.
Like anybody in Georgia doesn't buy their Sunday beer and know how to do that.
Especially since it was on Q100. Q100 is the demographic that we're really looking for right here.
Well, he has parties, you know, prom parties.
That's all the true time.
So he's on Q100. He's hip guy.
He's a hip guy, Sunday Perdue.
I think it was probably the governor staking out a position for negotiating the close of the legislative session. And he's got an out on this because Sonny Perdue has always supported any legislation that gave local option or local control on anything. And so he has an out where he can say, you know, I personally don't agree with this. I hope that most of the communities in this state reject this, but, you know, it's up to the locals to decide, and then he'll sign the legislation. And that will be part of a 3 or 4 bill trade deal that he'll sign that in order to get something he wants. And you know, the Senate President and the House Speaker will all be part of some big trade there. But I guess there is something though to talk about. Is there really a great harm in there not being any beer and liquor sale on Sunday?
Well, yeah. I mean, people are going to go to bars instead of sit on their sofa and watch the 1 o'clock game on the NFL. You know, they're going to go to sports bars, and they're going to be driving home at about 5 o'clock when people like Sonny Perdue are making their way to the evening service at church. And that's a real danger. And there's no reason not to have this. I think we're one of 3 states in the whole country
that doesn't
allow this. And I would like to just point out the last time I predicted that it would pass, and Decatur guy laughed at me, and I'm going to be right in the end.
I think he will be. I think it's going to pass. He's going to sign.
It was your good point, though, is it was really about hurting the cats on this, because there were a lot of cats. I mean, you had the convenience store lobby, you had the grocery store lobby, and then the liquor lobby came in, and it was like everybody sort of wants the same thing in the end, but they want to make sure they are all part of the discussion.
Right. Yeah, and I guess the only irritating thing for me on this is it perpetuated that notion that somehow liquor is different from beer and wine, and I'm glad to see that the liquor guys are jumping on the bill now, because we've got to get past that point. Everyone needs to understand beer, wine, liquor, all the same.
Well, in the end, the only real difference is they're 2 separate lobbies. So
It's about the money. I mean, Publix, yeah, I think, was a huge supporter. It with the language that it's, you know, only applies to grocery stores and convenience stores and not specifically to package stores and liquor.
Part of it for them is revenue, but then the other part is you have a large number of folks who come into your store and they walk out irritated on a Sunday, and they kind of blame Publix for it, not necessarily the state. So, you know, for them, it's also just creating more of that service opportunity, not just making money.
Sure, but you have to admit it's more attractive to them than one that allows the liquor stores to sell it as well. You know, if they're the only category.
Well, I think most people, though, are probably happy with, I think probably Publix would be better off trying to get the legislature to let liquor be sold in grocery stores, because I'm not really clear on why that's. Why do you need to go to a package store to buy liquor? What's that do?
That'll be years before we see that.
I know that the lobby is too strong for that. But,
I know, you know, I'm the oldest guy here, but I'll tell you the story. Growing up in Virginia, the liquor stores were owned by the state. There were no commercially owned liquor stores. And you would walk into the package control store, is what it was called. You'd go to a counter, you'd ask a guy for a product, and he would go down this aisle and disappear. and he'd come back with your bottle and put it in a bag real fast and ring it up. It was considered such a dangerous product that you couldn't touch it in the store. You had to receive it in a brown bag and take it out.
You get your liquor ration from the commissar.
It was kind of the feel. That was kind of the feel.
Well, speaking of our fearless leader, I'm not sure how much. I can't really imagine this ever happening, but in January there were some rumors that Sonny Perdue was going up to Washington, maybe partly for the peach care thing, but also maybe auditioning for a role as the 2008 vice presidential candidate. The thought behind that is none of the major candidates right now are Southern, but they need someone who's Southern on their ticket. So out of the current governors, you know, who might be a good fit, Sonny Perdue is one of three. And I can't really imagine it ever happening. I just kind of...
Well, I think if the GOP thinks it's in their best interest to choose a former veterinarian as their vice presidential candidate, I say, go ahead. I'm looking forward to 2008.
Well, not to derail the conversation too much, but, well, first of all, I don't think that Governor Perdue has any shot at the VP slot. But if we look just slightly to the south, to Florida, although he is newly elected and would only be in office for 2 years, Charlie Crist has poll numbers that would make any consultant salivate. A new poll came out just this past week where he has a 70% approval rating among Democrats in the state. He is easily one of the most popular governors right now and is a rising star in the GOP.
And he's been an up-and-comer in Florida for a decade, serving as attorney general and a very prominent member of the state Senate. A very, very popular guy, somebody to watch. And I'll tell you, The Sonny Perdue thing, I can imagine Sonny Perdue being in a Republican administration, a cabinet secretary, but I think vice president probably is a stretch for him because he clearly does not enjoy the type of public interaction that you have to go through in order to be a vice presidential candidate. But somebody here in Georgia who I think everybody should keep their eye on is going to be Johnny Isaacson. I think Johnny Isaacson could be a vice presidential material, and if not, I imagine he and Sonny Perdue switching places. Isaacson can come back and be governor. Sonny Perdue can go off and be a senator.
It'll be interesting to see Cagle versus Isaacson if that happens in the next few years.
Yeah, and I think Cagle will come to his senses and decide he could be lieutenant governor for 4 more years.
Do you think Perdue would really want the type of life that he would have to change? He would have to change his life drastically to become a senator.
Sure. Yeah, I think being a senator is really one of the easier positions in Washington.
I think it's still too mobile of a position for Sonny Perdue to ever have. Not to say that he's, sedentary.
Well, actually, now that I think about it, vice president might be the appropriate slot for him. I mean, he does like to dress up in funny suits and throw parties and stuff. That's pretty much the vice president's role, isn't it?
He would have to give up his yearly return to practice for, spaying some cats.
Baby calves
and so on.
I don't know. I can think of a lot of people in Washington that should be spayed and neutered.
Yeah.
Well, let's get back to the legislature. There are a lot of bills right now floating around, revolving around Georgia children. Probably not necessarily a bill, but an issue that's come up is the sudden disappearance of funding for a big chunk of the money for Peach Care. Just recently, all new applicants have been kind of frozen out. So, and they're looking at probably cutting a lot of people from this program. Basically, Perdue went to Washington and was told, no, sorry, we aren't going to fund this. What's the legislature going to do?
Well, the latest rumor is that they're probably going to take a 2 or 3 week recess and let this issue stew a little bit and let it come to a boil. I think what we're watching is a partisan gamesmanship going on, and the heat's going to occur on the Congress, which is now controlled by Democrats, both houses, and I think everybody's going to be content to let them stew on this issue. So I would not be at all surprised if you hear the Georgia legislature here in the next week or two talking about a 2 or 3 week recess to let that heat turn up on the Democrats on Capitol Hill.
What if the heat doesn't doesn't do anything to the Congress, what do you think our legislators?
Oh, no, they're Democrats, it will.
Well, there's not much they can do simply because of the amount of money that we're talking about here. I mean, this is not a significant amount of money for Washington, but a significant amount of money for Georgia. And, I mean, there's not that much money in the budget where they can just ship this over to Peach Care. And I think locally for Democrats, you know, no one wants to ride on the back of sick kids, but I mean, my next campaign slogan would be, what happened? 3 months ago, we had a campaign where Sonny Perdue is saying everything's great, it's a new day in Georgia, and 3 months later, suddenly we got kids that are going to be kicked on the street and out of doctor's offices. What happened? It was his stewardship that led us to this, and you know, there needs to be some splaining.
What about all the school, different school bills? There's a Charter School Act. Casey Cagle is a primary proponent of this, basically letting entire school districts decide to turn their whole district into kind of charter schools. I'm not really sure what parents or students would gain from that. Are there any?
Charter school, the concept. Well, let's also remember the charter school thing came to life in the mid '80s. They were championed by Bill Clinton around 1990, 1992, on the meter of school reform. This one doesn't move the needle anymore. It doesn't really qualify as education reform. It's nice, and it will give some school districts flexibility should they choose to do it. But it's not really going to mean much in terms of reforming Georgia's education system. Something that you know would be more innovative in terms of providing vouchers, and you can call them whatever you want to call them. If you don't like the word voucher,
scholarships.
We can call them scholarship. We can call them anything you want. That's really much more in the vein of education reform and changing the educational process. It's very nice that Casey Cagle did this, and it's actually very smart. He's setting himself up as a statesman who's a little bit above the fray by avoiding vouchers and doing charter schools, but it's not really going to change education.
What about the vouchers? Because isn't there another bill that's come up which would basically give special needs students a voucher to go to a private school?
Yeah, it's Eric Johnson's bill that essentially would allow a special needs child to take $9,000 and take that anywhere, including a private academy. And it's probably going to pass. And on paper, it actually looks like a pretty good bill. I think there's a lot of practical issues with it. I mean, you can't just take a single student with $9,000 to a private academy that doesn't already have a program and hire a teacher for $9,000 a year. That's not going to happen. What I think could happen is in certain areas where you have a high concentration of special needs children that you end up pooling that money and there may be some special academies created for this purpose, and that may not be a bad thing.
Yeah, the unions are screaming that this is the beginning of the slippery slope into vouchers.
Well, it is.
In a sense, it is.
It's a thin edge.
We can only hope, from my perspective. But there's a funny thing in Georgia law. Actually, it's 37 states. It's called a Blaine Amendment, and that is the amendment that says that you can't use public funds for sectarian education. This was put into the Georgia Constitution and other constitutions named after a man named William Blaine, who was the Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives, ran for president, and he hated Catholics. He absolutely hated Catholics. And this was during the time of the great Irish migration here during the potato famine. And there was this concern that this Roman Irish menace was going to take over America. So he actually tried to have this done as a constitutional amendment to the U.S. Constitution. It failed. And when that failed, they went around sticking it in state constitutions. They actually were successful in 37 states. The real shame here for the unions and the PTA and all of those folks who are fighting it is that they're relying on one of the ugliest, most bigoted constitutional amendments that has ever been put into public law or into a constitution in order to fight school vouchers, and that should be their eternal shame.
Well, that's a bit of a stretch, Randy. I mean, I agree with you. Blaine was a disgusting human being, and what he did was absolutely wrong. But if we're going to have a voucher system, I'm going to have a problem with part of my property tax money going to a school that teaches 6,000-year-old creationism.
Do you have a problem right now with that money going to a nursing home that is run by a Catholic church?
Actually, I do.
Well, it's already happening.
Well, I know. And the move towards faith-based sort of public service in this country is a big deal.
Or also public hospitals, a lot of charity hospitals run by religious institutions.
Okay, but here's the difference.
They got a crucifix on the wall.
Yeah, and you know what? I'll be brutally honest with you. We shouldn't be funding them.
Okay.
Period. But especially with education, where you're dealing with the next generation in this country. And I'm not against vouchers. I said earlier that I'm actually kind of ambivalent towards it. And I may even lean towards vouchers if I could be convinced. But there's got to be some standards. There's got to be some accountability. They're already struggling with this in California with the university system, where they're having these homeschoolers apply. And they want them to take a test to make sure they actually understand the basics of science, because these kids are being taught basically the Fred Flintstone version of biology. And I don't have a problem with vouchers in general, but I do have a problem where it starts to cross that line of church and state.
Oh, and the last word I'll have on that is, let's remember the Constitution says that the Congress shall make no laws establishing a religion, and then there's a huge giant comma, and it says after that, nor prohibit the free exercise thereof.
That's right, and as long as we're not funding religious institutions, that's fine.
Okay.
One thing that I thought was a little bit interesting that happened in the legislature recently is that they've gone in, they've said, we're not going to support the federal, national ID standard. Georgia will not take part in that. And the reason I think it's kind of odd is because, the Georgia Republican Party has spent so much time trying to push, like everybody in the state having a Georgia ID. I'm not really sure why they feel like we shouldn't have the federal ID. I'm not necessarily for or against it. I just think that's interesting, a little ironic.
Well, again, as the oldest guy at the table, I remember back in the 70s, there was this notion that we were all going to have a national ID card, and it was communism that was taking over our government, and they fought it for years. Now it's an issue of national security. I suspect that what's going on here is that the state and the federal government are setting up for a battle over just who's going to pay for this.
It's an unfunded mandate. That's the big problem.
Yeah. And, it's, again, it's almost just another version of what's happening with Peach Care. It's just something for everybody to play out financially.
And also taking a stand against it, to a certain chunk of the populace, is taking a stand against the mark of the beast.
Right.
I mean, I know that seems ridiculous, but there's a lot of apocalyptic thought, and there's a lot of apocalyptic fundamentalism going on. And
we passed the voter ID,
but that's just the state. Georgia's fine.
Yeah, do as I say, not as I do.
Yeah, and then you'll have everybody microwaving their driver's license.
Everyone microwaving their driver's license
and then pulling the magnetic strip out of their dollar bills.
That's right.
Exactly.
Yeah. Last thing I wanted to talk about that the legislature's done is just the idea to go after speeders, charging them higher fines. If you're going over 85 miles per hour in the freeways or 75 miles in a highway, basically charging these speeders higher fines for a statewide trauma network, and just the idea that all the money that they're going to generate from that revenue is going to be able to fund this network is interesting, I think.
There's probably not enough money there is the problem. I have no problem with charging higher tickets on super speeders. I have a bigger problem, especially living here in the Atlanta area, with the aggressive drivers that are weaving and violating gores and not using turn signals. But brass tacks it sounds like a great idea, but there are even Republicans saying there's not going to be enough revenue generated here. Trauma centers are extremely expensive.
It makes for very good PR.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's easy enough. I mean, it's you got sick people and you've got a reviled group like speeders, and it's easy enough to cast a wide net and say, how can you be against it, right?
It's also a very easy story to tell for that very reason, because, I mean, trauma centers, speeders cause accidents that cause people to go to trauma centers.
Exactly.
I was just on the bigger picture, I was surprised when this story developed during the early part of the session There is no trauma center south of Savannah. I don't know if you all knew that.
No, it's not.
And apparently last year they estimated that there were about 700 deaths in Georgia that could have been probably saved.
Well, there's a couple hundred thousand people who live south of Savannah. You got a couple.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
yeah, I wouldn't state this as fact, but I would suspect that if you were close enough in South Georgia that that you might actually be flown to Tallahassee to go to a trauma center.
No, that's right.
That's Jacksonville. Yeah. Or even Shands.
Yeah, again, it's one of Georgia's shames. This should have been taken care of a long time ago. And the problem is it ends up becoming a big economic development a wall as well, because a lot of corporations won't locate places, especially if it's industrial, where there's not a trauma center. And that's going to continue to be a problem for the folks in South Georgia in terms of developing that economic base.
That's a sad fact. That's probably would be good enough topic for another podcast. Is, you know, we tend to forget practically everyone that lives below Savannah. You know, if you don't live around Savannah or even on the coast, because the coast is pretty and we like visiting there, but everywhere else we just don't think about it.
The part that I call Southwest Georgia, and some of you think is part of Alabama.
Right. Well, most Atlantans think that Georgia stops about a mile south of the airport.
Right.
Well, yeah, I laugh when I hear someone talk about like Lovejoy being South Georgia or Forsyth.
That's making
anything south of Jonesboro is South Georgia.
Well, I see in the paper all the time, you know, reading and reviewing the newspapers every day, where people are airlifted out of Valdosta and Tifton and Moultrie and over in the southeast coast to Atlanta after auto accidents or industrial accidents or things of that sort. And they're clearly losing the time they need, because the trauma centers say that first 60 minutes after a severe trauma is the most critical time. And, you know, it takes that long for the chopper to get there.
And it's really about money, because, like I said before, they're not only expensive operations, but, you know, you mentioned the corporations. You don't make money off of the emergency rooms.
Yeah, exactly.
But if this isn't enough money, then it sounds like this is, you know,
this is pie in the sky stuff here.
Right.
Yeah, I think it's putting the ball in play.
Yeah, at least we're discussing it, which is a big, big step.
Shining light on the issue.
Yeah. But, you know, the step is not going to lead to the next step is, you know, what we're discussing now. Why is there not a trauma center? And that's never going to come up this session or next session.
Well, see, it's like cigarette taxes. People are going to add whatever they want to it because it's easy to say, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to punish the smokers. I'm going to punish the speeders.
And I'm cancer center.
I'm not so sure that it wouldn't happen. I think this may wind up getting wrapped into a lot of the certificate of need debate. I think all of this is in play. The certificate of need issue is not going to be decided this session. It's going to roll over to next year and maybe the year after that. And that's all going to get wrapped into the same issue regarding trauma care. And it's something where you don't know where they're going to go with it, but it is. It's encouraging to see that they're starting to address those issues and applying some free market thinking in an industry that is so ridiculously regulated that it could never find its way out of the mess it's in.
Well, we've ran out of time. I want to go around the table one more time just to get everyone's final thoughts, and then we'll wrap the show up.
Well, I recently traveled to Mississippi, and I know we talk about the Georgia DOT quite badly sometimes, and I just want to say that all you have to do is go outside the state of Georgia to realize that there is some good in the Georgia DOT, because I drove on an interstate in Mississippi that had the consistency of a dirt road. So Georgia DOT, this month, I'm going to give you a pass.
All right. Alabama's pretty bad too, if you've ever driven through some of the less populated areas there. But I want to, as always, thank Amber and Rusty for hosting us, and Joseph for lining it up.
Yeah, thank you very much, Joseph. And also, if you're going to give the DOT a break, I will give Fulton County's judicial system a break. Having served on jury duty within the last couple of weeks, it was painful yet enlightening. I know everyone tries to get out of it, but I would advise you, if you are stuck in it, you're going to learn something, probably about yourself.
Well, and the last note I have is to go back to the peach care debate. The bad thing about their taking 2 to 3 weeks off is that it's going to extend the legislative session, and everyone needs to remember that no man's life, liberty, or property is safe when the legislature is in session.
Amen.
The sooner they're done, the better off we all are.
Cheers.
I want to thank everyone who came and participated as a panelist for showing up, and I want to thank you for listening. This is Joseph G., and we'll talk at you later.
My bad.